Hello, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Eric Siska.
Steven Sadak.
And we hate movies. Hello, everyone. Welcome to We Hate Movies. Thank you for tuning in, as always. If you are new to our fine program, thank you so much for checking us out. We appreciate you taking some time out of your commute to dedicate it to us, you know? Right? And so this is weird because this is the final episode of our Oscar month, even though the Oscars were 2 days ago. So either congratulations, Michael Keaton, or sorry, Michael Keaton. We don't know yet.
You get him next time, champ.
We are recording, you know, the Thursday before the Oscars. We're all pumped, but... hey, you know, nobody knows. This is weird.
Are you really pumped for the Oscars, though?
No, because actually in my line of work, it means depending upon things that win or lose, there's a whole lot of bullshit for me to do on Monday morning.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's kind of like an extra work thing I have to pay attention to. I'm not psyched for it at all.
I've always been nonplussed. I mean, I like the Oscars. I like the pageantry of it.
Oh, yes. You see them come out there and strut their stuff. Who is the best movie in the universe this year?
I mean, there is something like the tradition of watching it. I've watched it like every year since I was a kid.
Oh, I'll watch it every
year. It's a cheesy award show just like anything else. It doesn't mean anything. I hope, again, because we're recording this in the past, I hope that Neil Patrick Harris was a good host. He's fantastic.
Wait, this is the past?
No, this is...
All right, I won't spoil it.
Well, actually, Eric, we're all long dead.
Dude.
We're a bunch of ghost white noise.
RIPD, dude. We're all in the white noise.
We're just voices on a podcast?
Yeah, we're just voices, dude. We haven't existed for years.
Oh, my God.
Don't you remember, dude? We recorded Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and then there was that gas explosion, and all four of us
God.
Died.
We all went into the soundboard and then into the Mac, and then we're internet ghosts.
Yeah, dude. We're ghosts in the machine.
Well, this is the worst things to be.
I guess that's true. You could be in white noise. So this is White Noise from 2005. It's directed by Jeffrey Sachs.
Now, it's a movie, White Noise. It's not White Noise like the Decemberists new album and or people talking about Jimmy Fallon or yelling, yee-haw!
That's definitely
whitest noise you could make is saying, yee-haw.
All right, can we do, because we've all been doing it before we went on the air, go around and we'll do like who has the best white noise impression. So Steve, we'll start with you. All right, so that's pretty good. Eric?
Hey, stop it. I'm gonna die.
All right, now here's me. Now tweet at us at WHM Podcast who you think had the best white noise.
Tweet at our ghosts, please. Well, tweet at our ghosts.
Yes, but also please adjust all the levels and that and those moments of audio and see if there's any haunting messages.
Oh, Jesus Christ. This movie is like, I hope you like watching Michael Keaton look at shit. The movie.
Michael Keaton looked bored the entire time.
He's thinking about everything but being in white noise.
Well, you know, speaking of shit real quick, I just want to address something. Now, if you haven't heard last week's episode on The Seventh Son, Steve brings up this mailing garbage idea to people.
Oh, right. Not a great segue, but I don't want to forget this. I don't want to forget this.
It's a B-minus of a segue.
Well, I did say speaking of shit.
Had I just recently said shit?
Someone's always saying shit.
Yeah.
I guess that's true. All right, so
potty mouth ghosts here.
So, all right. So, yes, this story is fantastic.
Well, okay. A long time ago. No, actually... someone told me this, and I think it's kind of like almost like New York City folklore at this point.
Oh, this didn't actually happen to you?
This happened to someone I know.
Oh, it's definitely an urban legend.
No. Someone I know very well. So there's this crazy woman, right?
Uh-huh.
And one of the things about her was after 9/11 happened, she decided that she owned Ground Zero. And she was going around trying to sell the land or the rights to develop the World Trade Center again.
What?
And she would go around to government offices in the city.
Sure.
Until apparently there's like, I don't know what her name is, but there's supposedly a Facebook page devoted to like crazy stories about this woman.
Oh, awesome.
And one of the big things she does,
yeah,
is she mails her garbage to PBS.
PBS doesn't need it. Don't pick on them.
NPR and like WNYC. She's going after like public institutions. She's got like an axe to grind against the government or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man.
Oh nice. My God.
Just mailing your garbage, huh?
It's just so crazy. And then also when like, you know, she goes to these government offices to complain about everything. And when these people are at their wit's end and tell her to please leave.
Yeah.
You know what she does then? She looks at everyone and she goes, "You have AIDS, and you have AIDS, and you all have AIDS.
What?
You liberals have AIDS." And that is mailing garbage.
Wait, so this woman's like still alive?
As of like a year or two ago, yeah.
Fingers crossed, huh?
She might be white noise now.
Maybe she'll run for mayor or like some sort of like, you know, elected office. Put her money where her mouth is. Her garbage mouth.
Honestly, it might be maybe if the post office handled my garbage, it would be a little bit better than what's going on the streets of New York.
So what is going on, by the way, in this movie?
Yeah, it's Michael Keaton plays an architect because it's like one of the five movie jobs you can have. And he's got a wife who's a novelist, and then she goes missing.
That's another movie job, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
How about this? I would wager that there are the number of movie architects outnumbers actual real world architects.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Right? That's probably a thing that's not impossible.
Same thing with people who identify themselves as con artists. Mm-hmm. There are definitely so fewer actual working con artists.
Yes,
right.
Way
today.
More cinematic con artists.
In real life, we call them grifters.
Do you think if Michael Keaton winds up losing that Academy Award he may or may not have won at this point when this episode comes out, he's going to call somebody a cinematic con artist? Like if Linklater like wins over Inarritu or something, yeah. He's like, "That fucking con artist, that movie con artist."
Oh yeah, definitely. Like a bitter after party.
So he's also got a kid, and he's like, this is like the second wife, stepmom situation. She also may or may not be pregnant at the beginning of the movie, which he's super excited about at almost 60 years old.
I mean, she's definitely pregnant.
Definitely, yeah. I would say she's...
Well, she has a positive, like, test, but they haven't been to a doctor.
Oh, okay.
Only later
in
the...
Call it bullshit on that test?
Well, no, sometimes it's called a false positive. It happens. She even says... Because he's like, "Oh my God, I'm going to go downstairs and tell Mikey he's got a kid brother." And she's like... Slow down.
Well, yeah, that's like crazy because, like, you know what? Miscarriages happen, everybody. Let's just like cool it on telling little kids that they got a little brother.
Or
until
it's
we're
a
past-
false positive.
Yes. Hmm.
And then you take like a couple more tests and you go to a doctor and he's like, "Hey, man, you're pregnant."
Well, you know, I did not know it was this complicated.
Yeah, so like the kid's there. She goes off to drive the kid off to school.
Right.
He's got to go off and be an architect and he's super excited that his wife is pregnant.
He's dancing through the office, like, "Get ready to get my wife some flowers and chocolate, secretary." And the secretary's like, "Something seems off." And I'm like, "Fucking really, Lorraine?"
You know, and he's like, "Oh, he's going to have all sorts of sex tonight." So he gets his apartment all ready for sex. And he's like kind of dancing around the apartment.
Oh, this is the house. This is the beautiful bay house.
Beautiful house.
Oh, yeah, that he designed with his two little arms.
And his
that he had his multiplicity brothers build for him. Is he an architect in that movie, too?
Yes, he is, actually. He's definitely an architect.
And you know what? In the Batman movies, he's the architect of Gotham's salvation.
You're right. Doesn't end. You go to the movie unemployment line, it's architect or novelist.
In Beetlejuice, he's the architect of Gina Davis's irritation. So there you go. I don't know. But his boombox starts making all sorts. He's got this really prominently placed boombox in the middle of his house.
And it is a baboom box in 2005. Come on.
But it does have MP3 capability because that's all written on there.
Oh, okay. All right.
You could definitely play your CDs and your tapes.
Right.
It was that weird like Venn diagram when all were in play.
Man, yeah. I hated those devices because like, one part of it was always like cheaper than the other part, and it was usually the CD part.
Yeah.
radioception was like fantastic. The tape deck, of course, worked. And then your CDs, always brand new CDs, would skip for no reason.
Yeah, because it was a piece of shit.
So yeah, like right away, like he's like, "Oh, hey, Mikey, did you flip with the radio?" And he's like, "No, I didn't, Dad." And it's like, "Oh, the ghosts are already settling in."
Right, because it could not possibly be like a flaw in this badly designed boombox.
Yeah. It's not like you left like the microwave on or something, and it's just interfering with the transmission. It would have to be ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, you know, "Oh, I'm going out with my friend tonight," because like she got out of a relationship or something. You know, he's like, "Okay, I'll wait up for you and do architect things in the kitchen until you come back." And she just doesn't come back. And we go into, like, the wife is missing. And this is what's amazing to me is I think Total Tops, and, like, Steve, you read a lot more than I do, but I think Total Tops, there's maybe, like, less than 10 globally known writers. Right? You got, like, a Stephen King, like, these superstar writers, right? Okay. So, like, a Stephen King, a J.K. Rowling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, George, if you're talking about the absolute top, sure.
Because, like, CNN is covering this woman's missing case.
Right.
And they're like, "Internationally known author has been missing for days. And her husband, the famous architect, Michael Keaton." And I'm like, the news is not covering this as heavily.
She's a pretty white lady goes missing.
Yeah, that's true.
You're totally right. The whole fucking world stops.
And if you get a prominent architect with a prominent novelist, there's American royalty. What are they? Mary-Kate and Ben. What is that prince name? William
and Kate Middleton.
Yes.
Mary-Kate is half of those twins that used to be on TV.
American
they're
royalty.
They're white noise now. That would be
They're dead?
No, they're not. But I mean, wouldn't that be weirder if white noise was just like weird, like, you know, TV reruns talking at you all the time?
Holy shit. Yeah, that's like,
that's creepier that's than
fucked
shit.
Up.
Yeah.
If they just, and it's an episode you've watched before, right? So like you're watching Seinfeld and Kramer bursts in and throws the money down on the table and he's like, I'm out of the contest. Did you see that coming, Steve? And you're like, what? I've seen this 1,000 times. Yeah, I know, Steve. That's why I can take a break from the dialogue you love so much and talk to you for a few minutes.
Wait. Now, we're saying that Michael
Richards
in the show is turning to the camera and saying?
Yeah, exactly. Talking to you.
Because it's weird white noise now. It's like white noise ghost TV.
Funny side story. My great-grandmother had Alzheimer's in the end.
Uh-huh.
Similar thing happened to her.
Are you serious? She thought Kramer was talking to her?
She thought Dan Rather was talking to her.
Well, he was, dude. I mean, Dan Rather talked to us all.
Dan Rather was sending money, and where's the money? Where are you guys taking the money?
Oh, you're taking my Rather money?
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
Your Rather bucks? That sucks.
No, yeah, no, it's a sad story.
It is a sad story.
I got something kind of similar, and it's actually more white noise than not.
On a scale of one to white noise, where is it?
It's like a 6.5.
Okay.
It's an Andrew Jupin ghost story. Whoa. My great-grandmother, right, my Nana, nice old Irish lady, right? Towards the end, she had like a brain tumor.
Sure.
So it was like making her see shit, right? So we're sitting around one day watching a Roseanne rerun, and we're like kids. And it's like me and my brother and sister in front of the TV. And my mom comes in and she's like, "Hey, everybody, I'm going to order us some pizzas for dinner. And we're going to have dinner at Nana's house." And we're like, "All right, whatever. Roseanne's on." And
that was the country's attitude back then.
Exactly right. And so my Nana turns to my mom and she's like, "That's good, but make sure you order enough for everybody. Like, get like an extra large pizza or whatever." And my mom's like, "Well, Nana, it's fine. It's just the two of us and the three kids." And she goes, "Yes, but what about the two gentlemen in the white coats in the doorway?" Dude, I fucking shit my pants watching Roseanne. Oh, it was terrifying.
I was waiting for you to say, "That's not enough for John Goodman."
Yeah, I'll need a double... extra double cheese on that. And he's just talking to her from through the TV.
Oh,
the
my
white
God,
noise.
Dude. It was terrifying.
Well, though. You could really, we could spin all sorts of personal tales because nothing happens in this movie. Literally, almost next to nothing happens. We spend 10 minutes of Michael Keaton. And again, like, you think about your Gone Girls or whatever, and like people, not even Gone Girl, but like a story of a man actually missing his wife. Like, nowhere is Michael Keaton implicated in this thing. Like,
He should be the number one suspect.
He definitely should be.
There's a useless detective who has nothing to do with the wife's disappearance, but like when people around him start dying later, there's this detective character who's like, wow, man, you keep being on the scene of all these grisly murders. That's strange. End of discussion. There's no scene where he's like, something about this ain't right, Michael Keaton. You're going to be going down for this. I'm going to tie you to it somehow. Nothing. Useless detective character.
But what's also useless is Michael Keaton isn't even like being bereaved at all. They never show. It's all montages of him like just looking at radios. You know
and
what I mean?
Being like inconvenienced and stressed out that she's missing.
Exactly. And then like we cut. Finally, this fat
guy waiting for her to come back from the store.
This fat guy starts following him, right? That's when the movie really starts to pick up.
Right, when this creepy fat guy starts stalking you. The fat guy from Ace Ventura 2, by the way.
Nothing more sinister than that. You're just seeing a fat guy around all the time? The same fat guy?
What is more terrifying to you? Being followed around by a mysterious fat guy or being followed around by a tall, slender man?
Ooh, God. You know what? Slender Man is scarier because a Slender Man can do damage. I feel like I could get the fat guy if I needed to.
Or at least outrun him.
Right. Oh, yeah. The Slender Man's going to chase me away. Are we talking about the mythical Slender Man now from the internet?
Yeah, either him or like that dude who played Lurch in the Addams Family movies. One or the other.
Speaking of white noise, Slender Man does do like white noises out of his face.
Are you kidding me?
I think so.
Well, we're really tying the room together with this one, huh?
Yeah. What does a fat guy do? I guess fart. Is that kind of a white noise?
Ask an 80s comedy. It's either farting or burping.
My life is an 80s comedy. So.
I was really trying not to tell this story on the air because it's not a story, but right before I got on, it's really, really cold in New York, right? And sure. I work in Times Square, and right before the subway, this older gentleman and his wife, he goes, honey, stop. And he stops, and he like holds on to his wife for support and farts really loud.
Wait, in what world were you not going to tell that story?
Seriously, in what world did you think that didn't qualify as a story? That's totally a story.
That's like the best thing I've ever heard.
It's the best thing I've heard all week, hands down. It's Thursday, too. I heard a lot of things already.
He goes, all right, let's go.
That is amazing.
Did his knees buckle?
He really leaned in. And he used his wife for support to make it through the event.
Did you see the expression on her face?
She was a little disgusted.
But she's supportive.
Yeah, she was. Yeah.
She was only a little disgusted because it's not the first time that that's happened.
Man, I want to know where they ate before this.
There's a bunch of Applebee's around there.
Did you get a whiff?
No. Well, it's so cold. That thing just died on impact.
Right. It froze in the air and fell to the ground and shattered.
That's the one perk of this cold winter.
Oh, man. So this fat guy is like, hey, man.
Ian McNeese, by the way, is his name.
Yes, he is in Ace Ventura 2.
No, okay. I mean, I'm sure he's farted.
I'm sure he has some balance crippling farts as well. Good God. So he's like,
hold on, do you think that's when you realize you need a fat guy cane? Is when you can't even fart under your own steam anymore?
That might be it.
That's when you realize, oh, I need a fat guy walking stick.
It's either that or when it takes you like 20 minutes to get out of a chair.
Oh, well, yeah. One or the other.
Also, like if you fart like that and you fall down and break your hip and you got to live with that knowledge that the fart did it.
Dude, you have to tell the doctor because he's going to be like, how did this happen? Did you slip on ice? There's so much ice outside. No, I farted and I buckled.
And you better fell to the ground.
And
you better be honest, too, because if you say you slipped on ice, the doctor would be like, well, this impact does not look like ice. This does not.
Something's off here.
Yeah, there's something off here. Now, you got to be honest with me. Did you fart?
So it's been like a month since Michael Keaton's wife is missing. And then Ian McNeese is like, follows him outside of his house, follows him through his office, and then finally Michael Keaton's like, hey, fat guy, what's going on here? What's your big problem, fat guy? And he's like, hey, look, you know, I didn't mean to really talk to you, but your wife's been talking to me via the white noise, and, you know...
That's because he killed her, right? Well, that's what I would think.
Exactly. She's been missing, and he never even goes to the cops about this guy. Like, any creepo fucking dude comes up to him, like, oh, your wife loved you so much. I mean,
yeah,
like,
totally.
Okay.
Yeah, cut to Michael Keaton hiring a private investigator.
Call the police right away.
Definitely call the police. And like, he's like, you know, I've got these tapes with your wife on them. He's like, yeah, whatever.
Also, though, he really breaks the news to him in the most unprofessional. Like, listen, man, you are like a full-time ghost hunter or whatever you're doing, I guess, for a living, right?
That's what you call a con artist, by the way.
Yeah, it's a movie grifter. They call him con artist. Mm-hmm. But he's like, he's saying all the shit or whatever, and he's like, your wife is dead. And it's like, dude, you need to be like, hey, man, you might want to sit down for this. I have some information.
Yeah.
Some new facts have come to light. You know what I mean? And you're like, all right, I will accept your business card and go back inside without calling the police.
Now, how much do I have to give you to talk to my dead wife, to communicate with her? Like, there's a racket here. You know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it's shown in the film, but Michael Keaton's paying this guy.
Money's changing hands. Especially.
Do you think so?
Deborah Kara Unger, too. She's coming over his house all the time.
He's got clients. He's like a paranormal researcher, investigator, or whatever. Yeah, dude, this is a bigger racket than psychiatry. Oh,
man, that's...
Everyone's just coming over, laying down, hearing things in the white noise. $50, please.
Ugh, that's really upsetting.
Well, it's the storage. You know, you can knock them on storage fees. Like, oh, no, the listening's fine, but it's all these tapes.
Right, all the tape stock, the hard drives. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of hard costs. He's like, yeah, whatever, fat guy. Then immediately he gets a call... that, oh my God, your wife is dead.
Yeah, the police show up.
And apparently the story that everyone believes is that this woman got... We're in Toronto, by the way. We're totally in Canada. But
isn't it Vancouver, I thought?
You're probably right. It is Vancouver.
Yeah.
So she got a flat... But I think the movie probably takes place in America. They never really specify.
No.
She got a flat by the...
In Ghost Town. Sorry. It's Ghost Town, Canada.
By the bed of a river... While the prevailing theory is, whilst trying to fix this flat, she slipped on a rock, hit her head, and then drowned to death.
Mm-hmm. Yep,
that's what the detectives are. That's the story.
There it is. But then somehow the body went like upriver, like against the current, like a fucking salmon.
It just makes no. Like, how is there not?
Hey Canada, how about a guardrail, or maybe a Mountie on patrol? Isn't that what they have?
But listen. The point is, they're saying, like, she fell, she broke her arm and hit her head and then went upriver. And not one police officer is like, you know what, Michael Keaton? Why don't you just hang out?
Yeah.
Why don't you make sure you're talking to a lawyer? Because this is looking really bad for you right now. Mm-hmm. You just found out. I'm sorry, you told us earlier you found out that she was pregnant. You fucking offed your pregnant wife.
They don't even, do they ever find her corpse?
Yeah, they do. That's when the police come.
They bury her.
All right, great.
And they
they find it and they bury it.
Well, because I was just thinking, like, come on, find this bloated corpse in the water.
Yeah, they do. They don't show you, you know, getting it fished out.
I need it shown.
There's no grisly violence at all in this movie.
I mean, if I can see Laura Palmer's corpse at the start of every episode of Twin Peaks, I want to see... One corpse in this spooky movie. This is like a horror movie, kind of, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a horror movie. Great, great description of this movie. It's kind of a horror movie.
So they're like, yeah, she died in these really mysterious circumstances. Guess that's it.
Best of luck with the funeral.
Well, you're a prominent, upstanding architect. You couldn't have architected a death. Now, could you?
Architected a death?
Yeah, well, it's Canada.
Also, why doesn't AAA exist in Canada? Oh, I got a flat. Let me just use my flip phone cell phone that everyone has in this movie and just call AAA and be like, I'm not going into the murky depths to fix this fucking flat tire.
Well, we'll find out at the end of the movie why she never got to call Canadian AAA.
Which I think is triple B. Everything's just a little different in Canada. So we finally get to 6 months later, which is like... You're waiting for it in the beginning. Because once the wife shows up and she's all happy and she's like, oh my God, I'm pregnant. You're like, well, she's fucking dead. Like, let's just get
totally.
This is the beginning of the
That's
movie
a
where
death
she dies.
Sentence.
Yeah, exactly. I thought that little kid was dead too. Because she's like, I want to take little Timmy off to school. She's like, see you later, never again, Timmy.
Well, what they do, they
enjoy
set it up.
Enjoy being
like,
a ghost.
Enjoy being a little boy ghost. What they do, and this is like bad movies do this all the time, it's like, you're doing kind of fast shot, reverse shot as someone's backing out of a driveway in your awesome convertible VW Bug, by the way.
Yeah. Very nice.
And like she backs up into the street and then it cuts back to Michael Keaton and then rapidly cuts back to her. And I was like, they're getting hit by a truck.
or the less elegant, you watch Michael Keaton go back into the house, you hear a crash, and then a hubcap rolls by.
that's the budget way to do that. Crash sound. Then just a PA throws a hubcap down the street.
Yeah, they didn't have enough money for a burning tire. I prefer the burning tire.
Well, we can roll the tire, but we got to give it back to Old Man Peabody at the end of the shoot, so we can't set it on fire.
You're not burning my tires.
Nobody burns my tires but me.
You can rent it. You roll it down the street and you bring it back. $55.
Tire rolling. That takes me back to the Great Depression.
Speaking of the Great Depression, that's what Michael Keaton's feeling, I guess.
And that's when this movie, you realize what's going on in this movie, is that this movie wants to be a J-horror film, a Japanese horror film, right? Because
thanks for specifying.
Well, not everybody, knows the slang of J-horror, right? So all of a sudden this movie, it starts raining. He moves into a very gray, boxy, Japanese-looking apartment.
Absolutely. There's no doors anywhere.
No.
But it is, really, minimalist and nice.
Well, he's still an architect, man. Yeah. He still has to have taste.
Dude, not for nothing. Again, why I'm looking at Michael Keaton for this murder beef.
Thank you.
He's the sole heir of whatever the fuck. He's got
internationally known author with a new book coming out.
Exactly, a new book called Eternal Weight coming out. Dude, guess what those are? Sky high numbers.
You know it, dude. The fucking morbid creeps are going to come out of the woodwork to buy her last novel.
This fat guy's probably got 12 of them.
I got her to sign them for me from beyond the grave.
And, they have the life insurance and stuff.
Oh, forget it.
All the checks are coming in. He's like... And then I'm sure he sold that house. He probably didn't just abandon it.
No, he didn't take a bath. And this is like during the housing boom.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. This guy's richer than God now.
See, but what you can't do, though, because I learned this movie lesson around the same time when this movie came out, that movie The Exorcism of Emily Rose, mm-hmm. which is a movie where there's like paranormal shit going on and Laura Linney's like a skeptic lawyer and blah, blah, blah. And it's a courtroom drama coupled with a horror movie. So you got to be careful when you're like, you want the police to come after him, because like horror movie plus like crime drama on the side, like crime domestic drama, like might not work out.
No,
I mean, this movie doesn't work out. So at least try it. Right.
Give it something.
But when I was watching it the second time, I was like, oh, yeah, like this looks like The Ring or those movies. Yeah. Like, Which one is it remade from?
Well,
and I looked, and it's nothing. This is original material.
This was the we had Ring Fever back in 2006, 2005.
Oh yeah,
The Ring came out in 2002.
Yep,
and everybody was just going nuts over that.
The Grudge came out. I think by the time 2005 rolled around too, I think that sequel, the American sequel to The Ring, was out too.
Yeah,
which
the Grudge,
terrible.
The Eye,
that shit.
With all these effects, too, which is really bizarre in this movie. Like, right when he's at the start, like when his radio's on the fritz, like, and we're just hearing that white noise. But we also have to cut to like the whole screen cuts to like a static television.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, wait, what? Is that, I guess that's the visual interpretation of sounds?
Well, also, when the TV's on like that, it's called white noise on the TV.
Yeah. But I'm listening to my boombox, buddy. I don't have a TV on.
Yeah, I guess you're totally right. And also, if you saw this movie in the theaters, like I totally did, you know that you're watching a movie screen, so the effect is also useless. If they're going for the effect of like, oh, no, the video went out. Like sometimes in movies, it's like, we're going to burn the film frame. And it's like the projector broke, which is like pointless now with digital cinema.
Are you talking about Gremlins 2? Yeah, Gremlins 2 doesn't play that well anymore.
Yeah. Hey, Gremlins.
What's great about Gremlins 2 is that whole scene is designed to be like watching it in the theater.
Yeah, exactly.
And it had no idea that no one would see it in the theater. Well, most people, it would
How
be
could they have known, dude? How could they have guessed?
You think Hulk Hogan got to keep one of those Gremlins?
I'll do this movie. I got to take home a Gremlin. And he was definitely calling them Gremlins the whole time.
Yo, Tanya, where the Gremlin? Is that what his wife's name?
Linda.
Linda Hogan, yeah.
Linda, where's the tuna?
I loved being in Gremlins 2.
ate too much fucking pork.
Oh, man, the best dialogue in any celebrity sex tape ever. Hulk Hogan burps, holds his like abdominal area, and just goes, oh, shouldn't have ate all that pork. And the woman is laying in the bed like, what am I doing?
Dude, 10 years, the Hulk Hogan's new sex tape is going to be him clutching a woman and farting.
It's like a gremlin came out of there.
He's getting advanced in age.
He's getting up there. Now Michael Keaton is getting like, oh my God, he's getting, which so much of this movie is like, just throw it up there. See what happens. We don't have to pay it off. Nothing gets paid off ever in this movie.
No, not at all.
He keeps getting phone calls from his dead ex-wife from her phone, which is totally turned off the whole time.
Oh, spooky.
And they're doing the horse shit that I hate when horror movies do, because it's everyone, if I'm remembering the root of the trope correctly, it's the story of the Amityville Horror, which was like, every night at whatever time, yes, like horse shit happened. And like horror movies have just like taken that and ran with it. And yeah, this movie, it's like 2:30 in the morning, you know, like he gets the knock from the cops at 2:30 in the morning. The fucking phone goes off.
I don't understand they never. Is that when she died? Is that
who
when...
is dying at 2:30 on the dot, dude? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like if you're going to do that, she fucking died at 2:37. You know,
that's. That points to mechanical error, right? Your phone's all weird.
Yeah.
It's doing it at a certain time because that's, you know, it's click and watch stuff inside. and it gets to 2:30 and something just doesn't work.
Right. If that happened more than once, I'd be like, there's something preventing this clock from going forward.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't do that.
So he's like, you know, I got this fat guy's card. I might as well go pay him a visit. And he goes,
and it's a real like, you know, thank God you're here. Also, though, again, suspicious circumstances, body upriver, whatever. You're going to go to this dude's house? The same dude that was like, I've been hearing from your wife.
Yes.
What? You're going to go inside this man's poorly lit house.
He should go there just to burn it down. Because this guy is weird.
That's what you do with weirdos, man.
Burn your house down, weirdo.
But here's my card if you want to get a new house built.
I could draw you a pretty new house. That's how he made his bucks.
I won't build it for you, but I'll just draw you a nice picture of how to build it.
Like maybe he goes to the house, burns it down, and he's got it ready. He's like, well, what do you think of that? I took the liberty of drawing something up. You know, maybe we can talk about it later.
So he goes in and he's like, you know, I'm so glad you're here. You know, my 4:30's wrapping up right now. This is perfect timing.
Dude, racket. That's what this is. Yep. It's a racket.
Out comes Deborah Kara Unger, who's in like Salt and Sea and The Game and a bunch of stuff. Just like destroyed. Like he's like, my 4:30 destroyed customer is just wrapping up. And she walks out with like raccoon eyes and like streaks of eye makeup down her face. Like, this guy's great.
You're going to love it.
Oh my God. What a service package. I got my first VHS tape today. We moved from audio to video.
Oh, if I could just relive my first visit, I know exactly what you're about to do is enter crippling depression, and ooh, I would love to be in your shoes right now.
I'm so jealous of you, Michael Keaton, a first timer.
When he sits Michael Keaton down to talk to him about what white noise is, he is out of breath the whole time, and he is literally just walking around a room.
He's exasperated, and I think it's because he's that excited to talk about EVP. I think that's what it is. Electronic voice projection, is that what it is?
I thought it was Elliot Gould versus Predator.
You want to get that alien in the jungle? I'm going to need 12 guys.
Someone make this movie. Please. For the love of God. That's what you need for the franchise.
Dude, here's what
I'm going to cover myself in mud. You can't see me.
This movie is 3 minutes long. It's a helicopter. It lands like in the jungle. He steps out. He takes a look around. The helicopter flies away. You just see him look up and he goes, what the? And then the predator shoots him in the fucking face. EVP and credits.
I'll tell you what EVP actually means.
It's
electronic voice phenomena.
Oh, phenomena. That's right.
Phenomena.
So he's like, here's what it is. I don't contact them. They come to me.
Yep.
You know, it's a weird, like, drug dealer situation. Yeah, exactly. It's like, I don't call them. They call me when there's something going down.
But do they, like, he's just recording all the static TVs and just, like, listening to them for hours. And it's like, oh, yeah, they're coming to me, all right.
Yeah.
They're coming to get me.
How does he even know who anyone is if everyone says, like, okay.
I don't know, but he's got volumes of logs.
I'll tell you what's going on. This fucking guy... He's trolling the goddamn obituaries.
Yes, he is.
And
he's
showing up at Michael Keaton's place and being like, I guess you're missing something, maybe a wife.
That's why it always starts with audio first.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Because you can just have like muffled nonsense.
Yes.
But then he gets to know the person a little bit. Like, oh, maybe it would help our investigation if I had a picture of your... You know, deceased.
Right.
Then he sees what celebrity looks most like this person. You know, he goes and gets like an old rerun of Dallas, dubs the tape a bunch of times, like wipes a magnet over it. Oh, there's your wife. Look, you can kind of see her.
That is so true.
Right? There's your husband. There's your husband right there. Are you sure it kind of looks like Patrick Duffy? Well, your husband kind of looked like Patrick Duffy. What a handsome man he was. So that'll be $75.
And then it's like, oh, you know, just as we're talking, as we're waiting for the tape to boot up, what line of business did your husband do? He's a car salesman, eh? He's like, cut to that fat guy later tonight eating a sandwich being like, I sold cars.
See, he said it. He said what his profession was. It's so stupid, man. So, like, she says, he said yes to me. Like, I asked him, or he said when he died, like, he would come back and tell me if it was true about the other side, what we believe or whatever. And he said, Karen, yes, or, you know, whatever her name is. And so, well, the kind gentleman here says, I probably won't ever see him again, but that's okay. She's, like, totally cool with it.
And, you know, they get to talking. He tells them about what EVP is. And essentially, yeah, all he's doing is leaving his he's ripping the antenna out of his TV, letting it go all day.
Totally.
Just taping all sorts of tapes.
Like, that VCR is supposed to be on 3. He set it on channel 4, and he's just taping the nothing.
And Michael Keaton sees this room of madness where this is all going on.
He's a hoarder.
And he says, I got to give me some of this.
I got to double down on this.
I got to do everything this guy's doing times 5. I'm going to get so many IMAX and so many TVs.
There's an amazing
deciphering everything.
There's an amazing line of dialogue, like when he's looking around this dude's command center, because make no mistake about it, it is a command center.
Sure.
And Michael Keaton just goes, is this your job? It's so awesome.
No, you're my job. You're the Kong.
You're the Mark.
He's totally the Mark. And I don't know. I mean, he does. Yeah, it's weird because he's like trying to put this guy out of business. Because he's like, oh, I could do it better than you, I guess. Yeah.
Well, so the dude is like, all right, you know, I'm going to go make some tea or whatever, see Deborah Kara Unger out. Yeah. Like, you know, you just sit here and, you know, start watching some static. Like, it's audio. So he's like, listen to this audio file. This is where I heard your wife. I'll be right back. I'll leave you to it or whatever. So he's like listening to this tape.
I write books. Somehow I'm internationally known.
And so he's like into it. And he's like, yeah, okay, that's cool. And then all of a sudden you see like 3 shadows go behind Michael Keaton. And you're like, oh, 3 dark shadows, eh? Mm-hmm. Sounds like evil ghosts to me. And then all of a sudden, the audio tape is like,
you motherfucker! You are the worst Batman! Your mother sucks cocks in hell!
And he's like, ah. And then the dude runs back in. He's like, oh, sorry, sorry. And he's totally like trying to cover it up. And Michael Keaton's like, what the hell was that? I heard my wife's angelic voice, and then all these people started calling me a fuck. And he's like, oh, well, we just do this, and we do this, and we do that. And then, and he's like doing all these keystrokes. He's like, and then it's gone. And he's like, did you just delete my dead wife's recording? But he's like oddly covering it up. But, and you know, this dude has had trouble with these ghosts before.
There's some line here where he's just like, oh, you know, Mr. Keaton, not every ghost is a nice ghost.
They can't all be Casper now, can they?
Yeah. Speaking of Casper, these three shadows.
Yeah, the three uncles,
the three dead assholes. Yeah. these guys. I think it's a shared cinematic universe.
And I mean,
you think so?
We could say that they're the antagonists of the movie, essentially.
Right, three ghosts.
They keep showing up. Never does this movie even try to tell you who they might have been, what they are. Eric had some crazy IMDb thing where somebody identifies them as demons, and I'm like, where the fuck did you get demons from?
There's nothing in this movie.
Not every ghost is nice, and if you're not a nice ghost, you're a demon.
No, man. That's not how you do it. Well, like, the ghost of a serial killer isn't a demon. It's just the ghost of a serial killer.
This is a good topic of conversation. Can you get promoted in the afterlife? Like, if Satan takes notice and is just like,
oh,
like what you did there in the mortal realm, how'd you like to bump it up a notch?
Be a demon?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, then there's like, are the other demons mad? You know, like,
you're definitely a different subsect of demon. You're like,
definitely
oh,
be like a subspecies.
Well, if you're a ghost, by the way, you're like on this plane still, so you haven't gone either direction. You're still stuck here.
A demon goes to hell and then back.
A demon is purely a product of hell.
Like, okay.
Born and bred hell.
Yeah, yeah, totally, dude. Made in the U.S. of hell.
And angels are heaven, right?
Yes, that's right. So, but if you're a ghost, you're neither. You're just a spirit. So these are like three angry people. So the movie needs some kind of like, three mass murderers were executed on the same night or some dumbass.
Scarelli brothers gave him the chair.
Anything.
Really anything. And it's nothing.
They don't even say, you barely know that it's them until the end of the movie. And it's like, oh my God, it's the three things.
But like, you can kind of glean.
Yeah.
Because the movie does
good.
A really bad job of like, you know, nobody sees them. It's always like when Michael Keaton's back is turned.
Yeah.
Then they pop up on all the TVs.
Yes.
And the movie loves doing the thing that all bad horror movies do, which is rely on nothing but sound scares. So, like, they come on the screen, and it's like, bow, like some really loud noise comes up, and you're like, oh.
That's the whole movie. There's no atmospheric anything, nothing, like, actually, like, pays off in a scary way. It's just loud noises the whole time. Again, nobody even investigates why this guy dies. And Michael Keaton gets, like, what is he, a dream? And he's like, oh, I gotta see the fat guy. It's at 2:30 in the morning. He goes to sleep.
I think
wakes up and he's like, "Oh my God!"
Like he's got like something's on the monitor.
Yeah,
and he's like, "Oh man, I got to go tell my teacher. I got my first, you know,
we
ghost
got
catch."
One!
Yeah, exactly. And he drives over to this dude's house. Well, he calls him and he's like, "Hey, we got one." He's like, "Oh, bring it over. We can watch it together. I'll make some popcorn." And so Michael Keaton gets over there and like. The place is trashed, and he's like, oh, that's not good. And this dude is just dead under a pile of TVs.
And videotape, too. Like, videotape everywhere. Like, it looks like it looks like the feds were after him.
Oh, man. So this dude's just dead, and then, like, Michael Keaton calls the cops. This is where we're introduced to this useless detective character.
No, hello. This is where you're introduced to, well, Mr. Keaton. Whenever there's a corpse, you seem to be right there. Right? I mean, this is really
is that
suspicious.
This time? It's no, I think that's this is the first time we meet that cop, though, isn't it?
But even still, he's like, oh, your wife just died 6 months ago. Now
this guy's dead.
Everyone he's spending time with is dying mysteriously.
Right. You're totally right.
Also, big flaw of this movie. I mean, Ian McNeice is a fine actor, but, you know, kind of never always the bridesmaid. This cop who needs to be somebody. You know what? Go out and hire an actor, not... This guy is mostly known for stunts as well. By the way.
Tell me this movie. You couldn't get a non-Alec Baldwin?
Yeah.
Seriously?
You couldn't get Daniel Baldwin, for fuck's sake?
Oh, my God.
I know.
Daniel Baldwin as a detective in this movie.
Yeah.
You just got another star from me.
You can't get Daniel Baldwin. Harvey Keitel sometimes you can get for this role. Get him out of bed.
Oh, yeah, God, you could. If you move some money around.
Yeah, Larry Fishburne's ready. He's game to be your detective.
And what is the conversation that is happening, like, between Keaton and this detective? Like, so what are you doing here? Oh, well, were you related to the deceased? No. I didn't know him that long. So what were you doing at his house at 2:00 in the morning? Oh, well, we're ghost buddies.
I came to sit with him. And turn the static on the TV all the way up.
He's like,
and just listen for messages from the dead.
He's like, sir, Vancouver's a very progressive town. If you're saying you were in a relationship with this man, no one is going to judge you. You don't have to lie and say you were watching blank tapes looking for ghosts.
It's a lover's quarrel.
Say you came over here to have some great sex with this man.
Got a little out of hand. One too many TVs in your TV
set. Oh, you're definitely looking at all those tapes. Okay, I want to see all those tapes.
Yeah, exactly. The police are seizing all those tapes.
And how boring is that, by the way? Just looking through hours upon hours of static? Like, Chief, I think there was something wrong. I think we took the tapes through a magnetic doorway. There's nothing. Oh, wait, was that a ghost? Then the cops get involved with the ghost hunting.
And now the cops are hunting ghosts. And then we get Canadian Ghostbusters.
So that's how it happens.
Keaton ups his ghost hunting game. He gets a million tube televisions. He gets some computers going on.
Oh, yeah, a lot of big, like, box monitor computers.
I mean, honestly, this is when you stop. This is when, like, this guy you know died.
Yep.
Probably because he was a con artist and he ripped off the wrong guy.
You're exactly right. Someone came back. That's a revenge killing.
Just move on with your life, man.
Instead, he's like, spend that lady's money. I know she's dead, but come on.
She would want you to be happy, Michael Keaton.
Spend it on that son that's slowly growing to hate you due to neglect.
Yeah, exactly.
He neglects the shit out of this kid in this
due
movie.
To ghost-related neglect.
He's a non-character.
The kid comes back. Is like, you know, it's a second wife. You know, it was a second wife. So his first wife will, even though this guy's like racked in grief and is doing all this weird shit, she has no problem dropping the kid off for the weekend because she likes her weekends.
Oh yeah, you know, it's just like the post office, man. Rain, sleet, snow, death. You're getting that fucking kid every other Saturday.
So he's setting up his tube television. He's like, Dad, why do you need so many VCRs? And he's like, well, in case you want to watch a movie and I want to watch a movie, we could both watch a movie at the same time. That sounds pretty swell, doesn't it?
And then this 5-year-old kid goes, that doesn't make any sense.
I don't really watch TV by myself. Dad, are you a professional movie bootlegger?
Yes.
But also, the saddest part about that is later in the movie, the kid's like, Dad, when are we going to watch two different movies at once? And he's like, maybe next time, sport.
Just sit in this room that no longer has a table because I'm putting more computer monitors on the kitchen table.
Dude, this is the room you're supposed to be drawing houses in. When was the last time you drew a house?
Totally. Get back on the saddle.
Houses need to be drawn.
So now, like, he takes up the mantle of, like, creepily showing up to people's houses to be like, hey, I heard from your dead relatives.
Well, he first goes to see a medium, which is this blind lady.
Another completely dropped ball in this movie.
Yep. She's like, first of all, you don't know she's blind until, like, you know, the scene progresses. And she's just like, oh, you know, is he showing her the tape or what's he doing?
No, this is really dumb. She's like, okay, does this street mean anything to you? He's like, no. And she's like, okay, so you lost your wife recently. She was a writer? Oh, okay. So you're like, all right, she's like a legit psychic. Yeah. And then she starts going, they're showing me all of these white and black dots. And she's seeing a broken TV in her psychic premonitions. And he's like, oh, kind of sounds like my investigations or whatever. But he doesn't say anything. And then she realizes what it is. And she stands back from the table. And she's like, you're fucking with some bad stuff right here. Like, you can't be doing this.
She says, you're meddling. You're meddling in forces you can't understand, et cetera, et cetera. Don't do anything. He's like, yeah, whatever. Even though, like, I mean, I don't understand. He's not even trying to get in touch with his wife. Now he's trying to, like, be the dead zone or something.
Well, that's the thing is she accuses him of, like, doing it as, like, a hobby.
Yeah.
And the thing that everybody always says about this, and it's also the plot of that dumbass movie Ouija, is like, if you're dabbling in stuff like that, everyone who's participating like has to believe and has to take it seriously,
sure,
or else like the aura is weakened and that allows negative things to come through.
Sure.
So I think it's a thing where it's like, because he's just doing this as like a little hobby horse thing, that those three ghosts are like, oh good, a noob. Now we can come through and start influencing the other side.
It's great because it's a movie thing where, like, you're talking to, and no one ever does this, where, like, you're talking to someone and they're shouting at you, like, you can't take it back! You can't take it back! Or whatever.
Yep.
And you just walk out on them. That works. Except when that person's blind, that kind of makes you a dick. You know what I mean? You got to be like, I'm leaving your house now.
He up and quietly leaves this woman's apartment. And then she comes, she follows him out, and this is where we get the final confirmation. She's like, your wife was pregnant, wasn't she?
Yeah.
And he stops on the stairs just like, ah, keeps going.
See, that's the thing. It's these ghosts got a 2-for-1 soul special.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
He delivers. Well, then the other thing we get involved in here is not only is he getting messages from ghosts, he's getting messages from the future. What in the world?
You might as well have the electricity gremlin come into this movie now.
Gremlin.
Oh, no, that electro gremlin's coming into this movie. Look out, Michael Keaton. It's an electro gremlin.
It wasn't in the theater with Hulk Hogan at that in the movie, so he couldn't stop it.
Yeah. Hey, Linda, I'm on Rotten Tomatoes. You know what my top-rated movie ever is? Gremlins 2. I'm barely in that one. It's a bunch of bullshit, Linda.
Linda?
Oh, right, I've been divorced for years. Well, anyway, back to unpausing Gremlins on Blu-ray.
Should have ate too much pork.
So he goes to this woman's house. Like, he's like, I finally got my first ghost scoop.
Yeah.
And he goes to this poor girl's house, and he's like, hey, did you know such and such? And she's like, that's my grandmother. And he's like, oh, well, I got a message from old Grams, and it's a smile or whatever. And then, like... And she's like, oh, my God, my grandmother used to always tell me to smile. Like, it's such horseshit. Yeah, like, totally why wouldn't you make some more, like, personal statement? You know,
yeah,
what
or
I
like,
mean?
Oh, you know, Uncle Albert, you know, left the money under the floorboard or something.
Totally. You know? You were adopted.
Yeah.
You know, something with a little more meat screenplay. Not just smile. And she's like, oh, my God, that was my grandmother. And then, like, she's, like, showing him out. And she's like, it's so crazy. My dad calls me 2 days ago, tells me the bad news, and then here you are now showing up telling me this great message. And then Michael Keaton's like, when did your grandmother die? 2 days ago? I've been getting messages from her for over a week. Which, two things. One, you're like, okay, future ghost. Second, you're sitting on this for a week, Michael Keaton? What are you doing?
And how many conversations are you having?
Why is she just saying smile the whole time? She's been talking to him for a week. A week, and that's the best you got was smile.
And you have he's taking logs of multiple ghosts coming at him. Like, stop.
I mean, look, he's got an inbox that's really, really building up. So he can't be going all around the Vancouver area.
Right, just looking for people. He's got to wait till, like, the specific details are out there.
So then he starts, like, visiting Deborah Kara Unger, because who cares? And, like, she's the only other actor in the fucking Actors' Equity Union in this entire goddamn movie.
And she owns a bookstore where... what is the actor's name?
Ian McNeice.
Ian McNeice was, like, asking her to store more of his files. So she's got, like, this really nice...
Yeah, you better comb those files, by the way,
before you bring them into your business.
Absolutely. Some guy's like, oh, I've got all these files. Would you mind holding on to them for me?
She's just like, okay, if you give me a tape, like, we watch it at your house in its entirety,
yep.
And then I'll take it home. But so the top level of her nice, like, independent bookstore... is just all this dude's files, like the paperwork. He has logged, like, every line of audio, and, like, every videotape is there, like, perfectly detailed. There's a lot of work that's going into this, and he has to be taking money, because this is way too much work for a hobby with no pay.
Oh, yeah, this is a big, big money right here.
I think it's $75 a visit.
Definitely. And why doesn't he come back as a ghost?
Yeah, you know, that's what I needed.
Just like you need that.
Like, you know, just give me one scene if it's just like, you're getting closer, Michael.
Or just, it wasn't worth it.
Oh, I've wasted my life.
Yeah, really.
At this point, he realizes that Ian McNeice was getting messages that were, like, mean, and, like, the word pig shows up a lot.
A lot. It's kind of like, you look at that note page, and you're like, it's like Jack Nicholson in The Shining, just writing pig over and over on the page. You're like, Jesus, man, you were getting bullied by these ghosts. And that is the alternate title for this movie. Michael Keaton stars in Bully Ghosts.
Yes.
Because that It happens more later on, but these three ghosts are just little bully ghosts.
And just he's realizing all this stuff. He's like, oh, my God, you know, maybe there's a connection. What's the connection? I guess I'll never find out until the end of the movie. And then he goes, the medium that he went to said something about Willow Avenue. Oh, my God, Willow
right,
Avenue.
Oh, right, right, right.
So he's like, you know, maybe I'll give that Willow Avenue a shot one day, one of these there days.
And he keeps getting messages from his wife like, go now. And he's like, go now. And the psychic said Willow Avenue. Yeah, what the hell? And he goes to Willow Avenue, and there's, like, this car accident.
Yeah.
And at some point in the movie, a few minutes before this, he's been, like gets his face, like, right up to the TV glass.
Well, he sees his wife, and he wants to make out with
he's
their
totally
TV.
He's totally going to kiss that fucking TV, Steve. You're exactly right. And then, like, all of a sudden, a different woman appears on the screen and, like, slams the glass and screams.
This was a real J-horror moment, right?
Yeah,
like, this
totally.
This is just, like... Oh, it's my wife, and she's beautiful, even in static.
I'm going to kiss my staticky wife with my big lips.
It's oh, like, no, it's one of those crazy Japanese kids.
Yeah, like, she's, like, 1 inch away from coming right out the screen, right? And then you got yourself a Ring moment.
Then you got yourself a lawsuit is what you got.
Yeah, the fucking production team of Ringu sues your ass. So he goes, there's this car accident. This car's like flipped over under an electrical pole. Yeah. All this, like, you know, the live wires are coming down and all this stuff. And he runs up, and the woman in the car, like, slams up against the window, just like the TV, and is like, save my baby.
So again, it's like the future. He's seeing messages from the future.
Is this Minority Report all of a sudden?
Totally. Like, why is this premonition shit? I thought I was watching a ghost movie.
Ghosts aren't from the future.
Or are they? Actually, that fucking second Insidious movie, you guys see that?
No, I've never met.
Time traveling ghosts.
Skipped it on purpose. I liked the first one, but I skipped the second one.
It's you're darn tootin'. There's time traveling ghosts
in
that movie.
Is it a good or bad movie?
It's a bad movie.
Okay. Yeah. I just didn't know what that darn tootin' was implying.
I was saying darn tootin', Steve. You pointed it out.
But that's the thing, is like the trailers for this movie, which I watched, all of them are like 50% just talking about EVP phenomenon,
right?
Elliot Gould versus Predator, and the EVP phenomenon is like EVP is when this happens and blah blah. It's the same guy who sounds like the same guy who does Unsealed Alien Files.
Is that a show?
Oh yeah, it's my favorite show.
Yeah.
What, really?
It's a conspiracy show that's on. It's on like Netflix now too.
Yeah, it's like a low rent one.
Yeah,
you know?
It's
just like, and the case file and. What is going on the moon?
You get to see a nice computerized casebook kind of open up every time.
Oh,
yeah.
That's fantastic. It's like a CD-ROM game.
The
13th guest or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, shit, yeah.
They're
13th hour? I don't know.
13th floor? That was a movie.
Yeah, 13th floor is a movie.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I was just going to say their photos of their gleep-glop aliens on there look like... You know, computer game.
Like puppet gleep glop aliens.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But it's the trailers are all like EVP is when this happens and blah, blah, blah. And they actually even bring up like actual cases of EVP throughout the days. And then it's like also a Michael Keaton movie. But like halfway through this movie, the movie gets bored with white noise and it's like, what about the future? Like, you know what I mean?
It's so dumb. It's so, so stupid. But you just reminded me, those trailers, I had kind of too much time invested in this movie. Like when those previews came out, it was like, go to whitenoisemovie.com to learn more about EVP. And I was like, fuck yeah, TV commercial. And it's like 2 a.m. and I'm on this movie's like promo site and it's all like, click here for an example of actual EVP. And I'm like, fuck yeah, promotional website. I don't give a shit that the sun's right around the corner. And I'm just listening to these things and getting spooked out, you know? Also, totally had a white noise promotional t-shirt.
Sure.
This movie came out. I was still working summers at the multiplex between college semesters. And they would give you, like, you know, promo packs with the posters and, like, postcards and shit. Yeah. Every once in a while, like, a t-shirt showed up. And I was like, say, white noise t-shirt. Don't mind if I do. I think I finally threw that t-shirt away, no joke, in, like, 2012. It was like a gym t-shirt for a while.
Yeah.
It was like a I'm moving and carrying boxes everywhere t-shirt.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, dude.
You go to somebody's funeral, you want to let them know that they might turn into white noise?
Yeah, just, hey, sorry for your loss, but I'm going to point at my T-shirt right now. Just make sure you're fucking aware.
I'll hear you later, lady.
Got a handheld radio set to nothing.
Hey, stay off my TV. Speaking of funerals, so yeah. this woman dies.
He saves the baby.
Right, so then we cut to the funeral, and it's... I got a real problem with strangers at funerals, yep. By the way. Keep that shit till after the service.
Now, you know what? If you go to any Roman Catholic funeral, you're definitely going to get some old Italian lady that has no idea. They just worked the circuit.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. My dad actually knew a guy
yeah.
in his like hometown, which is like a small town, you know? Yeah. This dude showed up to all the funerals.
Yeah.
To then go to the after reception and get the fucking food,
oh,
dude.
Oh, yeah, man, the after party's where it's at.
But this dude was mooching free food, and I was at a wake one time with my dad, and he was like, you see that scumbag over there? I was like, Dad, we're at a wake. He's like, I've known that guy for 20 years. This piece of shit shows up to every funeral in town just so they get the food later. I was like, that's the weirdest thing I've ever heard. Sure enough, he showed up at the reception.
Was he wearing a white noise T-shirt?
And it was me!
It was you from the future, because white noise also means the future.
Yeah, totally, dude. Twist ending.
So, Michael Keaton and Deborah Kerr Unger are at this funeral, and, you know, at the end, you know, a movie's shot in Canada when a star of Battlestar Galactica shows up.
Oh, my God. I jumped up and down.
And this
when
guy, he works in like the pod bay or something. What's this guy's deal?
Chief Galen.
He works on the ships.
Yeah, yeah.
Fighter pilot.
He's also sleeping with Grace Park there.
Yes.
He's doing all right for himself. Edward James Olmos goes up to him one time and goes, get your fat ass back on the bay, Chief. This is my favorite line ever.
Yeah, dude.
Did he take that shit or what?
Oh, everyone took everything from Edward James Olmos.
Oh, really? He was never deposed on that show?
Oh, dude, man. He's like... God, it's like no one spits in Picard's face, right?
Oh, he's like Picard level. Yeah. Oh, no, shit!
Dude, yeah.
I love me some Picard. I would work twice as hard for Edward James Olmos because you know what? He's yelling at you, and if he yells at you, you're in a lot of trouble. I feel like I could goof off on Picard's ship. You know what I mean?
Because you know what Picard does, and he was fucking famous for this, dude. He chews you out in front of everybody, and then at the end of the episode, he's like, Mr. Data, my quarters immediately. And then, like, he comes in, he's like, Captain, about earlier. And he's like, no, Mr. Data, that was hilarious. And you're just like, well, what the fuck did you yell at me for then?
No, but you're a piece of shit. You're always going to be a piece of shit. I'm going to fucking airlock you.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm going to murder you. And then he goes, now I'm going to go back to my quarters. And what does he do there? Doesn't call you in to have a little funny joke. He's I'm drinking mystery whiskey from space and I'm smashing model ships.
He makes model as far as I can tell, he makes model ships just to take his rage out of them.
Yeah, take that, Picard.
That's pretty great. Although he does in Generations break all those. You happy now? Elvry Woodard's like, broke your stupid toys.
I think it was First Contact.
Oh, you're right. First Contact. Excuse me.
You know what? He wouldn't even have time for Alfred Woodard.
Get off my ship, Alfred Woodard. You goddamn past ghost or whatever the fuck.
That other guy in that show that looks like John McCain and he's an alcoholic.
Oh, Saul Tai.
Yeah, he's a great character.
Yeah. Maybe I should watch that.
You should.
You have to.
So back to White Noise and not anything to do with Battlestar Galactica.
It's great because I was as excited as Eric because I was a fan, and also like it's another recognizable actor at all that I could just look at and be like,
right.
I know that you're doing something right now.
Four episodes of that show and I got excited. I was like, that dude from Battlestar.
Exactly.
Thank God.
Somebody in this fucking sea of nothing. And you know,
that's why they call it White Noise. That's also what they call Canada.
I love Canada, man.
So do I, but it's, you know, a bunch of white noise.
The Northern Territories. That's where white noise happens.
They call it the Great White Noise, right?
No, that's North.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Great White North.
I thought it was noise.
Mm.
So Chief's got his baby, and he's walking away, and, you know, Michael Keaton's like, oh, Chief, and he's like, what? He's like, oh, you know, oh, you're the guy that saved my baby. He's like, oh, thanks. He's like, hey, first of all, thanks so much for saving my baby. I appreciate you coming. You know, I would have nothing right now, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, but do you think your wife was going to this medium because this, that, the other thing? He's like, you know what? I really appreciate you saving my baby and all. And then he gets all chief mad at him and starts yelling at him. And he's like, he's just like, I don't want you around my kid. God damn it. Blah, blah, blah.
It's awesome because he's like, I appreciate that you saved my baby, but now I need some space and I need you and your weird friends to stay the fuck away from my family. And you're just like, oh, that dude's pissed. And that's why strangers don't go to funerals. No,
exactly. Because
you're just pissing people off.
That's why you get actors with credits under their belts to do short parts, all right?
So, but the thing that this scene accomplishes is...
Does it?
Not, well, this is how he's like, the future. Because he's like, so, hey, man, your wife, like, you know, can't, I saw it, like, before it happened. Isn't that weird? Stay the fuck away from my family. You know, the crucial thing that Chief says is, my wife may have been into your stuff, but...
Yeah,
I think it's bullshit.
Exactly.
And then so Michael Keaton's like, oh, wait a second. Like, she was contacting Ian McNeice? That's weird. And then they start going back through the logbook, and it turns out, like, the grandmother contacted Ian McNeice. Chief's wife had a session with Ian McNeice. And he's, like, putting it together. Like, all these people that visited this guy are now getting bumped off for some reason.
They never established that Michael Keaton's wife.
This is like the fourth time you've almost said Michael Douglas.
Well, that's his God-given name anyway.
That's true.
Oh, really?
Michael Keaton's name is Michael Douglas.
I've been lied to my whole life.
I know him from the old neighborhood, so I call him Mikey Douglas. No, Michael Keaton. Did they ever establish that Michael Keaton's wife had anything to do with this? Or what? No.
That's
right?
The one thing is she doesn't come up in the logbooks.
Okay.
But
then what
I
is
mean,
the
spoiler
point?
Alert, the ghosts send a dude to kill her too. I mean, we'll get to it. But it's not established.
No, here's the thing.
You're right.
Is that the heavyset individual that died, you know,
Ian McNeice.
He expunged all the records of her visiting, right? Like, your clients are dying and stuff.
Yeah, you gotta like put some distance between you and the
road.
I
think he's cooking the books.
Well, he is a con man, a con artist.
That's what I'm thinking.
At what point does then he starts looking at his white noise and he sees Deborah Kara Unger,
who's in the room when this happens? So that's got to be uncomfortable.
She's like, "Hey, what am I doing on white noise? Oh, fuck, man!"
And it's like her laying in a bed and she's like, it hurts so much. So she's like freaking out. They go to her apartment, right? And he's like, take some sleeping pills. I'll hang out with you. You know, it's fine. And she's like, what if I don't wake up from the sleeping pills? And he's like, it's cool. I don't know. This movie doesn't make any sense. Like, we'll figure it out. You know,
so we're making it up as we go along.
Just go to sleep. Maybe the movie will be over.
So she's sleeping and he like goes into the bathroom to take some aspirin. And when he like leans over the sink to put some water in his mouth, you see the Three Stooges fly down the hallway like and it's a bullshit thing where like he's used this big heavy doorstop to like keep the door open, and he comes out of the bathroom and the door's closed and the doorstop's like rolling on the floor and there's like light coming from under the door like Poltergeist, and he's like, I know that white light anywhere. She's got a broken TV on in there. And he goes in and she's fucking out on this ledge of her apartment, like a balcony or whatever.
She's Lethal Weaponing herself.
Yeah. And she just gives a little like smirk, which is totally a Bill H. Macy Boogie Nights smile before he blows his brains out. Yeah. It's like smirk, drop off this balcony. And he does a real half. There's no like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Don't make this mistake. He doesn't say anything. She smiles and drops. And then he's like, oh no. So she like falls down on this glass. She's still alive at the hospital.
Bull effing shit.
Yeah,
totally.
No, she's totally dead.
That's a bunch of nonsense.
20 stories.
Also, the ghost stuff, and you were talking about Poltergeist, way scarier movie, way better movie. But like, why can't this movie at least give me some Poltergeist activity, some books flying around?
Exactly.
Or maybe show me like those ghosts start to possess her, because that's the theory
that's
here.
Creepy, yeah. Right. I mean, and that's another thing that doesn't make any sense at all. We don't establish that, you know, chief's wife was like possessed while driving the car, yep, and like flipped it on purpose. Like, you don't see any of that. This is the first, and this is like, there's 15 minutes left of the movie and all of a sudden they're possessing people. Come on.
It's bullshit. And she's alive for no reason.
Totally no reason.
She has a black eye. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
Well, we also find out she's paralyzed from the waist down afterwards.
That's a rough ride.
But you're not living through this. Nope. And then the detective shows up and he's like, oh, you again. And just like starts slowly writing
put
in a notepad.
In jail. Yeah, this seriously. Guy belongs in jail.
And he's like, hey, man, are you going to be around later? And Michael Keaton, this is the only time it ever kind of comes close to this.
Yeah.
He's like, if you're asking if I'm going to skip town, no, I'll be home. Like, I'll be at my apartment. And he's like, okay, good, because this is starting to get a little stupid.
And so, like, one more of these, and my boss is going to get real mad at me that I didn't arrest you.
Yeah, totally. He's been telling me to arrest you all week, and I'm like, no, give him a chance. So he goes home, like, Michael Keaton goes home from the hospital, and his place has been turned. Like, they've turned this place inside out. Ghosts, that is.
What are they looking for?
See, that's the thing is, give me a shot of this apartment being ripped apart.
Totally.
Don't just have some PAs knock shit over.
And how cool would that be, too, right? It's just like, you can picture the scene, right? It's like Michael Keaton's J-horror apartment, right? And then all of a sudden, like, the TVs start turning on, like, yeah, one by one. And you start hearing, like, kind of like a rumbling, groan noise or something, yeah, like that. And then it's like in Ghostbusters 2, in the, yeah, courtroom scene, when the chairs just start, yeah, flipping, sure, right? Like, TVs just start going flying. Maybe, and computers fly through the window.
His eggs start cooking on their own.
Exactly, dude. Anything is possible. Instead, he just comes back and he's like, what was the mafia looking for something? Like, exactly. What is happening?
You basically never, ever see anything paranormal happen in this movie at all.
Unless it's on a dumb, broken TV.
Or then at the end where the ghosts come.
Oh,
but that's
God.
It.
We'll get there. It's right around the corner.
So he's like, oh, shit. He looks on the TV. One of the TVs is still on. He sees what... there's this woman missing pretty famously in the movie. Like,
it's another famous missing person of Canada, apparently.
And you know what? If I'm the detective, I'm like, who could be behind this?
That's the thing, is, man, just lock him up for a little bit.
And they have, he's already determined, by the way, that this missing woman also went to Ian McNeese at one point.
Yes.
So he's like,
he's
seeing her like, oh, she's still alive. Like, how can we put the pieces together?
Ugh. He goes to his construction site, which is where, like,
that's what I was wondering. It's his site.
Yes,
right?
Because there's this really stupid scene that sets up.
Oh, right.
In the middle of the
man.
Movie, like, he's like, you know, it's just one of his many sort of getting fucked with ghosts in the cheapest way possible. He's got like as most architects do, like, you know, Tom Selleck in Three Men and a Baby is a big famous architect, and he's always worried about the building inspector showing up. Oh, my God. The, yep, building inspector shows up. The elevator gets stopped, and he's like, oh, that's weird. And then this totally innocuous construction worker is like, hey, man, you guys okay?
Yeah.
That is it.
Totally, that's it. So then he goes back to the construction site, and it's like, it just happens to be catty corner from where they found the wife, because, yeah, there's a shot, like, earlier in the movie where he goes to, like, the accident site,
yeah,
and peers out and whatever. So it's like, oh, she was driven there for some reason or whatever. But so he goes into the building, he breaks in, and he's like walking around, and you just hear this scream, yeah, the same scream recording like throughout the scene. Yeah. And he's like, oh, so someone's in here. Okay. You know, he's putting the pieces together, goes up like a couple flights. There's like a Saw style or like a Hostel style, like, torture table with all these devices on it. And you're like, what the fuck?
What movie am I watching?
Exactly. He goes up another flight of stairs, and there is another computer station. There's another electronic command center, like, just built in this construction site. And you're like,
just for White Noise. Gets the best White Noise, yeah, in like, all of the provinces.
Are they not working on this site anymore?
Exactly. Like you're setting up this, like, it's like a Sliver-esque command center. And so then he goes up another flight, and there's this woman tied to a chair, and you're like...
But she's, like, tied in a vice. This is, again, yes, Saw, like...
Yeah, there's, like, a fucking metal band around her forehead, you know, like, crazy
shit. Shit's about
shit.
To get real.
And so then, like, he kind of leans over, and he's like, I gotta check around this corner so I can see everything that's in this room. And standing there is that construction worker from the elevator scene
from an hour ago.
It's Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
It's it was the man from the old mill at the start. Yeah.
And so he's like, the construction guy is like, sorry, Michael Keaton, they told me to do it. They tell me to do everything. And he's like, oh. And then he turns around and looks up, and those three shadows.
Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
And this is, I'm sorry, but this is the moment in a movie like this where you get some bullshit parlor scene of who these ghosts are and blah, blah, blah. And you know what, filmmakers? Like, it doesn't make it any more scary or exciting that you just never find out the identity of these ghosts. Like, I'm sorry, it's just shitty computer shadows.
Have a ghost walk down there and go to Michael Keaton. Since you're going to die anyway, I might as well tell you.
Exactly. Why not?
So, oh, no, the gremlins ate the parlor scene. Now this movie don't make no sense.
Hey, gremlins, we're missing a whole reel down here. I can't follow this now. Thanks a lot, gremlins.
And you're like, Jesus, Hulk Hogan, I know. It's so dumb.
And, you know, and at this point he realizes his wife didn't just slip in the river after all. She was murdered by this fucking guy. Thanks a lot, Vancouver police.
Totally, this rando guy just murdered her. And so, like, the guy, like, goes for the lady who's tied up, and Michael Keaton's like, hey, man, that's not cool. And then these ghosts are like, hey, man, that's not cool. Fucking Gremlin. And so, like, these three ghosts come down and start bullying him and beating him up, and he gets murdered by a ghost tornado.
Just these three ghosts going around in a circle, like, tearing at him and tugging at him.
Yeah, like, breaking limbs and shit. And then they push him off. You know, there's no, like, barricades anywhere or anything. They push him off the floor, and he falls like a bunch of stories. Hey, you don't really see what happens.
But hey, ghosts, kill your own ladies. What does this guy even have to do with anything? Why is he even here?
If they could do things corporeally, why do they need to possess anybody?
Exactly. If you're possessing Deborah Kara Unger,
yes.
Why do you need to possess this dude to make him do things you want to do? Just possess those people and make them do things.
Or use your ghost hands that move things and break Michael Keaton's legs.
Totally.
If you're going to have a ghost worshiper in this movie, have someone fight the ghost worshiper.
Exactly.
Right? Yep. Have a giant fight.
That's where that fucking psychic character comes in. She's like, you got a level 5 bow rod on your hands. Yeah. I'll help you out. And this lady's like doing all shit to like cast him out. Like, you need Michael Keaton to team up with that lady. Like, that's
something.
How this movie works.
Team up with Chief.
Get him back.
Get Chief to box this guy while you handle the ghosts.
That's how you settle all the old scores.
Yeah.
Or Ian McNeese ghost, like, comes out of a TV.
Yes.
Saves
and
him.
He's like, not today, you know.
Oh, dude, Michael Keaton brings one of Ian's actual TVs.
Yes.
Drops it on the floor, plugs it in. And then turns it on, and then he shoots out at the three ghosts.
Totally.
Yeah, man.
Looks like I've got myself a couple of string beans.
And then he rolls up his sleeves and he goes, sorry for the delay, Ace.
he's got like a fighter ace scarf on. Flying into battle.
Oh, anything.
RAF style.
So and he's the main character of your movie, and he dies in 14 seconds, and you're like, wait, what?
He just vanishes, and then they cut to, like, you don't see him fall, right? Like, the ghosts attack him with this tornado.
They break his legs, they make a little CGI puppet Michael Keaton.
Yeah, and so he's like, he's just disappears, it goes quiet, and then it cuts to this wide shot of the guy, like, with this woman strapped to the chair, and he's like, oh, well, now that that's done, let's get down to some Eli Roth shit. And he, like, goes at this woman, and then all of a sudden he's assassinated, and there's a SWAT team there somehow.
The detective, he had called the detective at some point. It's like, hey, if you're getting this, I'm probably dead already or some such.
But that dude, he calls him from an alleyway, and it's this whole thing of, like, I'm at here, like, come down, blah, blah, blah. But then you see the detective who's at Michael Keaton's apartment.
Yeah.
He discovers, like, the fucked up scene and everything. He can barely hear it. And you see him look at the phone. He's like, what? Wow, whatever. And hangs up the phone. So it makes no sense that the police would get here on time.
Nope.
They assassinate this dude. And then there's this detective like, huh, okay, I guess this person was behind all those murders I didn't want to suspect Michael Keaton of.
And the ghosts are like, jeez, it's a fence!
Yeah, totally.
And they run away.
Get back in the TV! The fucking SWAT team's here!
No room in here, it's me, Ian McNeese! This is my TV! It's like an old Looney Tunes cartoon, all the TVs are coming on, all the ghosts are inside of them.
And then like some SWAT team dude is like, hey, detective, over here! And like, you know, they... You see this like low angle shot of them looking down a couple of flights, and it cuts to the other side of what they're looking at, and it's just Michael Keaton just dead.
Didn't that guy play Birdman once?
Guys, Birdman was behind it.
Don't you mean Batman? No, I mean Birdman.
And then we just cut to his funeral, and Deborah Kara Unger's just in a wheelchair. Yeah. At the funeral, and then like
this is like the sequel to her character in Crash, by the way. It's just like that's where that leads.
Yep.
You see like the mother takes the kid in the van.
Mother played by nobody.
Just a nobody actress.
Just another ghost.
Yeah, they get in the van, and then it's like it's so terrible the way they do this. It's this like 7-second static shot of this car radio, and you're like, okay, car radio, turn on any time now. And sure enough, it turns on, and it's flipping through all the stations. And then you hear Michael Keaton like, I'm sorry, Mikey. I'm sorry, Mikey. And the three of them are sitting in the van like, what the fuck? Because you never really know if the wife knows what he's up to.
No, she's not a character in this movie.
You know, if it was a thing where it's like, you're looking for ghosts in your TV, that's so stupid. It's never addressed.
Nope.
Like, she knows something's up with him, but there's never a scene where it's discussed.
And she never stops putting that kid over there, so that means that she's probably okay with
whatever's
totally
going
on.
She's totally cool with it, right? And so, like, he comes on, and she recognizes, like, it's Michael Keaton, and she just turns the radio off, like, huh, well, let's not discuss that ever again.
Then we cut to Deborah Kara Unger, and then she's hearing all sorts of white noise from nowhere.
You see the three shadows go across the cemetery,
and you cut back to Michael Keaton or something and his wife as ghosts?
That's the very last shot of the movie, is a static TV and Michael Keaton and his wife like walk into the frame and it cuts to credits. But before that, they do another cheap-ass movie scare where she's sitting in that wheelchair and she's like, huh, looking around, sunny day. And the shadows go by and she's just like looking around. And she very quickly turns her head like this. They do a big sound scare, and it just cuts. That's nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, movie. That's nothing. Nothing happened there.
Nope.
An old man farted and almost was brought to his knees. That's what she heard.
He had to steady himself in the cold.
Yeah, and then you see the two of them, like, static, like walk through the static. And you're like, oh, hey, Michael Keaton's a ghost! Credits. End of the movie. So stupid.
There's no there's no less satisfying... And it, 8 out of 10 ghost movies end this way, where somebody, now you're one of the ghosts. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, yeah, you're totally right. Now you're haunting this house.
In White Noise 2, are they trying to bust Michael Keaton's ghost now? Or?
No, it's White Noise 2 is Nathan Fillion, and it's
Starbuck from Battlestar Galactica.
You're right. And the two of them are, it's more of like the predicting future accident shit.
Oh, come on.
I haven't seen it, but that's like the plot synopsis. So I don't think they're trying to search for Michael Keaton. I can't confirm or deny whether or not you see a newspaper clipping of him.
I'm sure it's somewhere.
Something like that, you know. And then the final thing that it ends with, because this movie loves just making you read shit about EVP, it's like each year there's 10,000 cases of EVP reported or whatever.
Right.
And then the last line is like, and 1 out of 12 always are malignant spirits.
Well, you could make up statistics to say anything you want, I guess.
Here's the thing, like, okay, it's like 1 out of 12 ghosts are jerks. So, like, fucking 6 out of 12 people are jerks.
So the ghosts have better stats.
Yeah, I'm liking the odds.
Well, the movie also opens with a quote from Thomas Edison.
Oh, grow up.
Which is like...
Oh, grow up, Thomas Edison.
You know, it's Edison talking about, like, oh, well, if it would be possible to, like, record the conversations from the dead, like, we should get working on that, because how cool would that be? And then, or whatever. And then it's, like, Thomas Edison. And what that is doing is saying, like, see, moviegoer? This is some real shit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's, well, Thomas Edison approved.
Thomas Edison approved of White Noise the movie.
Which is unfortunate. He's been dead a long time. Not even his ghost would approve of this movie.
Dude, he white noised on the set that day, and he was like,
I invented a lot of things, but not even my big brain could invent a great script like this. My blessing.
Would anybody recommend this movie?
No, because Michael Keaton apologized for it.
Oh, yeah. Explain that fact.
Apparently on the DVD commentary, he said that he phoned in a lot of his performance and he apologized to the director and anyone who saw this movie.
And once you know that, when you go back and watch this movie, you can spot those points like nobody's business.
He doesn't even, like, he has one scene of Michael Keaton freak out, which I'm like, oh, finally. But, like, there needs to be more of that, especially if he's scared. Like, he needs to be, like, Michael Keaton around.
Yeah, he's just bored as shit this entire time. Even when it's like, hey, man, I can guarantee you that you can hear your dead wife over this computer recording. He's like, yeah, that's cool. And it's not the character being skeptical.
Or depressed or anything.
The character is supposed to be into it. And he's like, well, how about that? I heard her. And you're like, holy shit, man.
And he's all that there is in this movie, and that when he's not working, nobody's working.
Would you recommend this, Eric?
No, but I would recommend Gremlins 2, The New Batch.
Yeah, I'd recommend anything with Gremlins.
Or Beetlejuice, or Poltergeist, or whatever else is on TV today.
Literally, whatever else.
I would recommend the Exorcism of Emily Rose over this movie, and a snoozy ghost legal thriller.
For sure.
Oh, man, no, I would not recommend this movie at all. I've been sitting on this movie for a long time, saw it in theaters. I mean, I've wasted so many minutes of my life.
You've thought about this movie a lot, because every time you put that shirt on, it crosses your mind.
I thought about the time I spent a Saturday morning at the movies watching White Noise, and it was like, I went with a buddy, and he was just like, dude, we shouldn't have gone to see this movie. Like, it was over with. He was like, I could have been doing anything else. I was like, I'm sorry, dude. We didn't pay for it, at least.
And now you're no longer friends.
I was best man at his wedding. He got over it.
He must have.
Still harbors some resentment, though.
That's White Noise from 2005, directed by Jeffrey Sachs. If you want to get a hold of us and find out more information about We Hate Movies, check out our website, whmpodcast.com. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We're at @WHMPodcast. Be sure to come check us out at the Lily Pad, March 21st, 8 p.m. in Cambridge, Massachusetts. We will be talking about the saddest movie Steve's ever seen, The Green Lantern.
The parallax in that, the big monster, kind of looks like these three ghosts a little bit.
You're totally right.
A little bit.
This movie could have used some more like Green Lantern special effects, I feel.
Could have used a lot more things.
They could have used a ship monster, which Green Lantern has, which we'll be making fun of. WHMPodcast.brownpapertickets.com. Pick up your tickets in advance. We will not be selling them at the door. And on a cool note, we have some cool news to report here at the WHM offices.
Ain't it cool news?
No, just regular cool news.
Just, all right,
regular cool news?
Just regularcoolnews.com, dude. This is the last episode of the show where we will be an independent podcast. As of next week's episode, we will be very happy in joining the Sideshow Network, the Sideshow Podcast Network. Very cool group of folks over there.
We're getting hitched.
We are getting hitched to a network, man. It's very exciting stuff. They have a lot of great shows over there. Check out sideshownetwork.tv.
And they got Gilbert Gottfried's podcast.
Dude, I'm hoping that, like, through this signing, we get to meet Gilbert. How cool would that be to meet Gilbert Gottfried?
It'd be amazing.
So sideshownetwork.tv. Go check out their shows. They got a lot of good stuff on there. We are officially joining the network next week. And you know, let's just to get people excited for the new network. You know, I will say this. It's going to be the same We Hate Movies. Yeah. Nothing's changing.
Nothing is changing at all.
You know, we just got a great support system behind us now, you know?
Yeah, I'm being replaced, but nobody would care.
Oh, yeah. The contract didn't pan out for Steve.
Steve's being replaced by a talking dog.
Yeah.
But that's fine. No. All four of us are coming over to the Sideshow Network. It's going to be very cool. And you know, let's not tease it. Let's, like, get people excited. Next week's episode, Steve Sadek, what are we talking about?
Teen Wolf 2.
Holy crap. The Jason Bateman, like, fake sequel,
practically an Oingo Boingo musical.
Man, I would love to just watch a feature-length Oingo Boingo musical. So next week, we debut on Sideshow. Everything's staying the same. Your iTunes subscriptions are the same. You can stream us on Stitcher. You can stream us on our app. You can stream us on our website. We will now have a SoundCloud page, which I believe is whmpodcast.soundcloud.com. You'll be able to listen to us on sideshownetwork.tv. So just more places to get the show, but wherever you get it now, you can still get it. But go check out sideshownetwork.tv. As of next week, we are a part of the Sideshow family. We're very excited about that. So next week, Teen Wolf 2, Good Gravy. We are starting this network debut with a crazy sequel. I'm very excited about this. So until then, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Eric Siska.
Steven Sadak.
Take it easy.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints. Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.